All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Canucks fans, and welcome back to another episode of Canucks Conversation, brought to you, as always, by the 2023 Toyota BZ4X. The BZ4X is Toyota's brand new all-electric SUV that is designed to go the distance for you and your family. The BZ4X is packed with Toyota's coolest tech, but still has that trusty SUV feel you know and love. And even though it's electric, it's capable of effortlessly conquering any terrain, whether it's rain, snow, mud, or your friend's questionable post-game recaps. The BZ4X will get you through it all. And of course, we're coming to you from the iconic Wall Center in downtown Vancouver. Looking for your next meeting space? Contact the Wall Center for all your event needs at sales@wallcenter.com. David Quadrelli alongside Harmon Dial, our technical producer, the man at the controls, is Grady Sass. We are here to break down a huge Vancouver Canucks win over those Buffalo Sabres. Harm, we were trying to throw out show topics today. Like, I was like, what do you want to talk about? There's like, I think, seven from the game that we could talk about. And I don't even know where I want to start. First of all, how are you?
I'm doing great. It was a different night because I covered the game and then wrote a post-game article after. And so it's one of those rare sort of weird nights. I won't call it rare, but it doesn't happen very often, where us up until 3 a.m. and then you set the alarm for 10:30 to make sure, you know, like, I still need my sleep. I'm not one of those people that can operate on 5 or 6 hours.
Yeah.
But I have to be up early enough to tweet my article. So then I keep my phone under one of my pillows. Alarm goes off at 8:45. And immediately, like, while half asleep, I'll tweet my article out, immediately put the phone down, go back to sleep.
That's a wow. Okay. You can't schedule it in advance?
Well, because the article doesn't get published until
the link
East Coast
isn't live.
Okay. And editors grab it in the morning.
You know what you need is an assistant. Get yourself an assistant.
Look,
get an intern.
Get a personal tweeter.
I'm not high up enough on the food chain like you, Quads.
Yeah, maybe one day, Hart. You'll get there, buddy. You'll get there. Okay, people in the chat, hit us up. We've got so much that we're talking about today. And look, I'll start it off. It was a good game for Elias Pettersson. Like, that's where I want to start. Yeah. Yesterday, we were talking about how you've got Connor Garland on your line. You've got Nils Höglander on your line. That line as a whole needed to be better. And look, I was very complimentary of Elias Pettersson's third period in that game that they played against the Washington Capitals. I thought he brought that same intensity last night, and now I just thought he had better wingers with him. Like, I didn't think it was all for naught because he had better wingers playing with him. Like, I thought the effort Elias Pettersson showed last night was the same as the one we saw against the Washington Capitals in the third period, at least. Again, you want it 60 minutes, I hear all that. But there was so much criticism after that Washington game, and to me, he looked like the same. He was moving his feet. Daniel Wagner's joining the show later, so we're gonna tell you all about Pettersson's reminder to move his feet. But man, I thought it was a really, really solid game for Elias Pettersson.
I think both are true, that he had better line mates, but also, like, in that Washington game, yeah, you can highlight the third period, but
yeah,
he was awful through the first two periods.
Way more to give in the first 40 minutes.
Yeah, so he was more engaged. And look, I think the worry that fans have had in this mini slump since the All-Star break has not necessarily just been the lack of production. It's that he just doesn't look dangerous on a consistent enough basis. And I think we finally saw that. He was engaged. He was noticeable on almost every shift. And for me, it was the second period that things started to click for him. Because even in the first period, yeah, he picked up the secondary assist on Connor Garland's jam play goal. But it's not like his assist really drove that goal. It was kind of an empty calorie point where he threw the puck across to Quinn Hughes. The pass was actually off the mark, and the goal itself was a bit soft from Devin Levi, who otherwise had an outstanding game. It was the second period where you started to see him click again, because even in the first period, remember, he whiffed that one-timer chance with basically an open net, and you're thinking, okay, like, that's the type of chance he normally buries. Is it going to be one of those nights?
Ray Ferraro on the broadcast said, start of the season, he buries that.
100%. But then in the second period, right off the bat, he loaded up for a one-timer chance on the power play. And then there was like a few-minute stretch where he sprung Ilya Mikheyev for a partial breakaway, drew the penalty. And first of all, we were kind of joking in the press box. We're glad that was called a two-minute minor rather than a penalty shot.
Oh, yeah.
To negate Buffalo's power play. Then immediately after, on his next shift, Pettersson sets up Garland on a 2-on-1 chance. Garland was in a little bit too deep, so it couldn't quite direct it on net. And then less than 10 seconds later, he's roofing that backhand goal in and around the net. That second period, especially that like 3 to 5 minute stretch there, was where he really took the game over.
And what you just said, that Garland play, where the pass was too deep for Garland, Garland stuck with the play. And Garland created that goal. Elias Pettersson scores it. Of course, he roofs the backhand, so credit to him. And he stuck with the play too. But that's the difference. When you get line mates that can get you the puck, line mates that can go in and be hard on the forecheck, like, that's what Garland and Hoglander did so well last night. Everybody on that team last night was moving their feet. Everybody was sticking to the staples. Like, they were moving their feet a lot when they didn't have the puck, Carmen. That's what this team needs to do to be successful. That's why I was most impressed, honestly, with last night's win. And look, I don't even want to say I was most impressed with that, because I think the most important thing from last night's game, Harm, like, yeah, Elias Pettersson gets the Schneid. Ilya Mikheyev looked good. Elias Lindholm looked good as well. You can go up and down the list. The power play looked very dangerous. And I think it was Miller, Hughes, and Tocchet all said that the power play could have scored 4 goals last night. And I absolutely agree with them. The power play was so dynamic last night, and they were moving around so well. JT Miller was setting up everybody. Like, it feels like everybody had a crack at the net because of how Miller was setting everybody up on the power play. And again, we see him on that half wall. He's so dangerous there. And that, look, they're just getting back to basics, it feels like. Like, this is what makes them successful, is that movement, that JT Miller on the half wall, that formation, obviously, is what's made them successful. But yeah, that was a really, really solid game for the power play. And I think if I don't highlight that as the most important thing, I think my whole argument the past 2 days of I'm most concerned about the power play, like, I wasn't worried about the 5-on-5 play, and I feel pretty vindicated in that, because I see them go right back to their basics against Buffalo, and like I assumed, they had no troubles getting back to that. We know they can do it. The power play, on the other hand, that was too long of a stretch for me to say this isn't the biggest concern that I have with this team, and they played really well last night.
Miller was a wizard. My goodness, yeah. The number of chances that he set up, empty nets, I mean, Besser twice, basically by inches missed.
Yeah.
Open nets, easily could have been goals there. Of course, Miller also set up Pettersson for that one-timer chance that he normally buries. Set up Pia Suter in the bumper for a couple of grade A opportunities. The one thing I keep going back to with a power play, and by the way, before I make that other point, on Pettersson's goal, I also love that Miller is shooting low for a redirect or the rebound, rather than, he's not shooting to beat the goalie clean.
Yep.
And that, I think, is an underrated part of Pettersson's goal, is him shooting and actually hitting the target. Because a lot of times, especially last game against Washington.
If you were JT Miller and you missed the net as much as he did against Washington, you'd be shooting low on the net too.
I mean, he was wiring pucks high, wide. They weren't close at all.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of, when you look under the hood at the power play's numbers, is Miller's been such a high volume shooter since the first month of the season, since, you know, like at, from about mid-November onward, and yet he only has 4 goals. Mm-hmm. So I think that's, you know, his accuracy as a shooter coming down the left flank hasn't always been there the last few months, but that's where him getting back to shooting for tips and rebounds was effective. One interesting thing I will point out as far as sustainability, can you repeat this moving forward, is we talk about how much more dynamic and familiar the Canucks looked in this set where they have Miller on the left half wall, Pettersson back in the right half wall. You've got a left shot on the bumper and Suter, which is familiar. It's the default look that they've had in previous years. Rick Tocchet pointed out that Buffalo plays a more traditional PK structure. They don't play a diamond. And I remember about a month ago, we were having this conversation of why isn't JT Miller on the left half wall as much? And Tocchet was asked about it at a UBC practice and said, well, most modern PKs play diamond. And if you're a diamond, he had a fantastic explanation. I'm paraphrasing in not nearly as eloquent a way as Tocchet is, but his point was basically when JT goes down the left half wall, that right flank PK player, like Miller just doesn't have space to make plays on his forehand.
Yeah, he's skating into the diamond.
Exactly, especially because the Canucks for most of the season haven't had a left shot in the bumper for him to have that quick, easy one-timer option. So Buffalo going to having a more traditional PK structure, not having the diamond, is a big reason why the Canucks went back to that default set in the first place. And that's what I'm going to be looking for is, okay, moving forward, as you play diamond PKs, can this continue to work? And I'll be honest, you've got to stick with this set, even if you've got concerns about can this work against a diamond, because nothing else has looked dangerous against diamonds anyway.
Yeah, you have to figure it out if you're playing against the diamond. And I understand it. I understand what Tark's saying about moving into the diamond. I think that was actually his quote, was you're basically either passing it or skating into the diamond. Like, you're going right into it. So it goes back to what I said the other day about how the Canucks have to have some swagger about them. They have to have some swagger about them having some elite talent on the power play, right? Like, they have to have some swagger about that and say, teams are going to have to adjust to us. And if they're using the diamond formation, we're going to break down their diamond. Like, we're going to figure out how to do that. And I don't know. I don't think you can go back to anything else, because as you said, nothing else is working. So I feel like, okay, this worked again, not against the diamond formation. Very important to note that, but what can you take from last night and apply it to when you're playing these teams that have the diamond formation?
Well, Pia Suter needs to be a threat that other teams respect, because again, as a left shot, it makes that set with Miller on the left half wall work so much better.
Miller highlighted that post game too.
Yeah, and if he can show even average finishing ability from there when he's teed up for grade A chances, then that works. But if you get to a point where PKs pre-scout the Canucks power play and go, this guy in the middle can't finish. Yep. Let's give him space. We're okay with him firing chances. We're going to sag off him. Well, then that creates problems, because now you're – other players like Brock Besser are going to have less time and space to operate with. I remember at times last season, for example, when the Canucks power play, when you still had Bo Horvat in the bumper, was at its best, part of why Kuzmenko would feast at the net front, mm-hmm. and there would be specific plays that you would look back, like against Nashville, for example, you'd watch the tape and go, well, why is Andre Kuzmenko wide open for a backdoor tap-in? Oh, it's because the defensemen are so preoccupied with Bo's shot from the middle, and they think he's the primary threat on this power play, that the PK defenders have to kind of pick their poison. They're saying, all right, we'd rather commit to Bo than the net front guy. And then, so that creates other options, opens other things up. Suter has to be a legit threat that PKs have to respect and cover rather than sag off, in my mind, for this set to operate at an elite level against diamond PKs.
I'm going to throw something at you as a vibe. You can't change the formation, right? Like, I think we agree on that you have to figure out how to do that. And the way to do it is by having that shooting threat, the left-handed shooting threat right there where Pia Suter plays. Who else is there if it doesn't work? Like, if it doesn't work, I don't think they should change it up. I think we've both made that clear that we don't think they should change up the power play formation, but who should it be? Because I'm thinking it's Nils Höglander.
Perhaps, yeah. I mean, you don't really have any other options, to be totally honest.
Yeah,
I mean,
like, who's a left shot that's going to be dangerous from there?
Yeah, I'm thinking you're throwing Elliot McCann in there.
No, you are not. No, you are not. All right, Wags is here. Let's get to the new Jack Adams Award favorite, I want to say. Daniel is brought to you by Wendy's. More specifically, he's brought to you, he doesn't even know this, by the Wendy's Daily Face-Off Survivor Pool game. Every all-star needs a sidekick to support them, just like Wendy's meal needs a six-piece of nuggets, like Elias Patterson and Daniel Wagner. And right now, Wendy's is teaming up with Daily Face-Off Survivor to bring you weekly prizes like free nuggets, burgers, and more. So if you think you're an expert in all things hockey, prove it. And if you aren't already, start adding a six-piece to your Wendy's order for just $3.49. It's a dynamic duo you never even saw coming. Sign up for Daily Face-Off Survivor Pool Fantasy today, sponsored by Wendy's and the Wendy's app. Let's bring him in. Published author, award-picking journalist. Have you won an award, Daniel?
I actually have. I've won a couple of BC newspaper awards, silver and bronze. No gold awards for me yet. But yes, I am technically an award-winning journalist.
Award-winning journalist, published author. Look at this guy go. And like I said, the front runner for the Jack Adams Award. Wags, can you please take us through, take our listeners through your question to Elias Patterson heard around the world? And hey, it got him going. Has he thanked you yet?
Like a royalties check.
I'll take 0.1% of his next contract. I'm not asking for much. No, I asked a dumb question, or rather I asked what would have been a good question in a dumb way. That's all that happened, really, is that I was a little too blunt with my question for him. I basically said, hey, you stopped skating. Why aren't you skating? Why don't you move your feet? Why not? Do you need a reminder to move your feet? At least that's how it came off, I think. Where really what I was trying to get at is sometimes we see elite players like Elias Patterson, they stop moving their feet. And why is that? And how do you get back to a place where you're moving your feet again? I was really trying to ask more of a process question, and instead it came off as more of a dumb reporter trying to tell the elite hockey player how to do his job. And
he clearly needed it. Like, I thought it was
he needed question. The reminder, apparently.
Absolutely. I thought it was a good question, Wags. I thought it was a good question.
I wanted to ask you, you wrote a fantastic article about a day or two ago discussing how in the Canucks locker room, how they're balancing trying to maintain a business-like approach with also trying to have fun and enjoy the season they're on after years of miserable losing. What were some of your main takeaways from having conversations with a bunch of players on how they're balancing having fun and enjoying the season with the business-like approach?
Well, I've found it really interesting how the Canucks have kind of put up this very, stoic front. When you talk to them after a game, they're very focused on not getting too high, not getting too low. So even after a great win and you talk to them, they're still like, oh, well, there's things we need to work on. We'll look at this in the video room after and we'll try to get better. It's like, well, you just won 5-0. Are you happy about that? Is that a good thing? Are you having enough fun? I guess that was kind of what I was getting at when I talked to them. Is like, we don't necessarily see you enjoying this season. I think Canucks fans are definitely enjoying it. Maybe we see them celebrating goals and being very excited in that moment, but like, do they really recognize just how good this season is? And of course they do. Of course they do. And what I got from them was that, yeah, they're having a lot of fun in the room. I really like Connor Garland's response where he basically said, like, this is the most fun I've ever had in a season. And that makes sense if you look at the seasons that he's previously had with the Coyotes and the Canucks. Yeah, this should be the most fun he's ever had. But like, that seemed to be a similar refrain from a lot of the players. Like when I asked Tyler Myers, just kind of tongue in cheek, like, this is more fun than the last couple of seasons. He's like, yeah, you know, just completely deadpan. It's like, yeah, a little bit.
Just a little.
And I think it's kind of interesting that maybe this season we haven't seen that much of that side of the Canucks. It's been all business in terms of how they present themselves to the public, whether it's to the media or to the fans. Like, it is just a very stoic, business-like approach. We're going to take each game like one day at a time, or we're going to look at it in practice and get better, work on what we need to work on. And it's like, well, yeah, but did you enjoy hitting Victor Olofsson, Quinn Hughes? Like, was that fun? Like, you know, there's a certain aspect of that where I think, maybe this is just my perspective, I think the fans would like to know that they're enjoying themselves. They are having fun. And I really liked how Ian Cole, I had a really great conversation with Ian Cole about this, and maybe like a quarter of the conversation I had with him actually made it into the article, but where he basically said, yeah, you can goof off, you can joke around, you can do whatever it is that gets you in the right headspace for a hockey game. Because honestly, a lot of players need that kind of joking around, goofy aspect of things to loosen up and to relax ahead of what's about to be a very high pressure, high intensity situation. You need to have that looseness. And he basically said, do whatever you need to do. If it's 7 o'clock and you're joking around, fine. 7:05 and you're still goofing around, fine. 7:07 and the puck drops, it's business time. And I really like that perspective where it was just do whatever you need to do, goof around, have fun. But when it's time for business, be mature, be a pro, be an adult. We're going to get down to business.
That's interesting, especially coming from a guy like Ian Cole, who's just, you know, been there, done that. I also wonder how much of that comes from Rick Tocchet as well. You know, the coaching staff, those guys have definitely been there, done that. Wags, moving to last night's game a little bit more, in all seriousness about Elias Pettersson, what did you think of his game? 3-point night for him. What have you thought of his game recently and especially compared to last night?
Well, I think last night was a really good night for him. He was moving his feet. and I think, you know, he does the interesting thing about that specifically. I actually had a really good conversation with Connor Garland about that process side of things, of why players stop moving their feet and how you get back to that. And he said in his perspective, from his experience, when he stops moving his feet, it's because he's overthinking things. Mm-hmm. He gets the puck and he's thinking about what he needs to do instead of just acting on instinct. And so when he's trying to think and process through all of his options, his feet stop moving because his brain is moving too much, if that makes sense. And I had a similar response from Rick Tocchet, where he was saying, like, if you don't know before you get the puck what you're going to do, you're not going to move your feet because you're going to be thinking in that moment of what you need to do instead of thinking 2 seconds ago, oh, this is what I'm going to do as soon as I get the puck. And he talked about it in terms of like a young player like Vasily Podkolzin. We've seen that from him, where previously he would get the puck and then go, oh, well, now what do I do? And kind of freeze. Whereas now he's a little bit more free, a little bit more loose. He's thinking of what he needs to do ahead of time. So as soon as he gets the puck, he's already moving. He's already getting his feet going. And so I think with a guy like Elias Pettersson, he's very smart. He has more options available to him than any other player on the Canucks, in my opinion. So maybe there is an aspect of overthinking things where he's processing too many options instead of just playing freely, playing on instinct. And Tocchet mentioned that as well, that playing with two guys like Connor Garland and Nils Höglander, who have a lot of energy, they're a lot of fun to play with. He basically said, go out there and have fun. And I think against the Sabres, he went out there and had fun. You know, as silly as that sounds, I think he was playing with his mind a little bit more clear, a little bit more free. He was having fun with a couple of line mates that are a lot of fun to play with because they keep their feet moving. They play with a lot of energy. It was funny, though. There was that one moment where Pettersson made that beautiful deke behind his own back to gain the offensive zone. But what did you see as soon as he finished making that deke? He stopped moving his feet and he went into a coast, and the man that he had like just gotten around caught up to him and checked him. And it's like, maybe if he had kept moving his feet, maybe he needed a reminder. I don't know.
Needs another Wags bump. He got the Wags bump last night. He needs another one.
It's more that, like, I don't think players hear all the time, move your feet, move your feet, move your feet. Coaches are constantly telling them that. He doesn't need a reporter reminding him of that. That's for sure.
Disagree.
Talked to Connor Garland about it. He said that he gets a text before every game from his parents reminding him to move his feet. So it's like, you know, they hear it from all angles. So it's not that Pettersson needs a reminder to move his feet. It's just there's, when you stop moving your feet, it's more likely to be a symptom of something else that's going on, overthinking the game, playing with too much going on in your head. Other factors come into that. I think Pettersson had a great game. I think he can be even better. That's kind of what I was trying to get at. It's like, we've seen him take over games, and we haven't seen that from him recently. Mm. In times when the Canucks have kind of needed a star to step up and take over a game, he hasn't done that yet. He hasn't done that recently, at least. And I think a lot of Canucks fans want to see that from him, especially knowing that he's got this big contract coming that's putting him up in the upper echelon in the NHL. You know, you look around the league and you see that from those kind of players. You see Nathan MacKinnon just take over a game. Mm-hmm. You see Austin Matthews just take over a game. And I think Canucks fans really want to see that from Pettersson. And he's not going to do it in the same way as those players. And I think that's kind of, there's a disconnect there as well, that fans would really like to see Pettersson take over a game in the same way that MacKinnon does. I don't think that's going to happen. I think he's more likely to do it in more subtle ways, in using more of his two-way game, making better defensive plays to control puck possession. And we haven't really seen that recently. And I think he's capable of it. And hopefully, as we get into the playoffs, we see more of that, because it's a long regular season. This is a situation that Pettersson hasn't really been in. The one time that, you know, he made the playoffs with the Canucks, it was a shortened season. So we didn't see how he deals with, you know, games 62 to 82. So I think that is part of it. He's facing a situation, more pressure, playing for a team that's first in the Western Conference with everybody else in the league gunning for him. And I think he just needs to, as Tockett said, you know, pop the seal and find that extra gear that he has. We know he has it, and we know he's capable of taking over games. We just want to see it. Canucks fans want to see him do it.
Big picture, we haven't had a chance to have a conversation with you about this, this team as a whole. I wanted to get your take on how you view them relative to some of the other, you know, top teams in the league as far as their playoff chances. Like, what are your expectations for this team once we head into the playoffs?
Well, I think the expectations have to be simultaneously kept in check, but they should also be pretty high. They made a bold move, trading away their first round pick and a top prospect in Hunter Brustevich to get Elias Lindholm. That's an all-in move. Maybe they didn't do enough at the trade deadline in some people's opinions, but they were somewhat restricted in that regards. But if you're going to make that kind of trade, if you're going to make the moves that they have to put this team together that is at the top of the Western Conference, you have to expect they're going to win a playoff round. Maybe they're going to win two playoff rounds. That should be the expectation. And I think they're capable of it. I think, as I said, Pettersson is capable of taking over a game. JT Miller, when he's on his game, is a force, especially we saw on the power play last game. He created grade A chance after grade A chance after grade A chance. He's capable of, again, like Pettersson, taking over a game. You got a guy like Quinn Hughes, who is right now the best defenseman in the NHL. He was dominant last night. Shots on goal were 12-2 for the Canucks when he was on the ice at 5-on-5. That's bonkers. He tilts the ice, I feel like, more than anyone else in the league comparative to his team. And so when you've got players like that, and you've got a goalie like Thatcher Demko, who's going to be coming back and hopefully fully healthy and well-rested, they are capable of winning a playoff round, winning two playoff rounds, maybe even going further than that, because they have that star power, that they have these players that are capable of taking over games and taking over a series. You look at the playoff bubble, you know, Bubble Demko, as he hates to be called. But Demko is capable of winning a series. Pettersson is capable of winning a series. Miller is capable of winning a series. If any of those players go off in the playoffs, the Canucks could go really far. If they don't, or if other opposing teams keep them in check with their strong two-way players, their checking lines, if they keep those star players in check, I don't know that the Canucks have the depth to make up for that. So that's kind of where I stand with the Canucks right now. I think they are perfectly capable of going on a long playoff run if their stars come through. I don't know that they have enough depth if their stars can't.
Told you, Harm. Yesterday, Harmon said they shouldn't trade every pick they have, but you clearly agree with me.
I don't know about that.
I laid out a whole Ponzi scheme. How your picks just keep refreshing every year, right? So just keep moving them out. Every year you're going to have new ones, so just keep moving them out.
Anyway, is that not the Vegas Golden Knights?
Exactly. Yeah, let's not be like the Vegas Golden. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, the Vegas Golden Knights might miss the playoffs, which would be the funniest possible thing to happen this season.
That's true. But they make playoffs almost every other year. So anyways, it's the quads model, we'll call it. We don't have to call it Vegas. Daniel, betting model. This book, tell me about this book that I'm still waiting for my signed copy of, but this book that you wrote about the Vancouver Canucks draft history. First of all, tell people about the book.
Okay. The book is On the Clock, the Vancouver Canucks history at the NHL draft. So it's coming out next week, which is just absolutely wild. I still don't have my copies of the book, by the way. So if you don't have your copy of the book, hey, that's not my fault. I still don't have my copies yet. They're still in the mail. But I have seen it in person. Our friend Patrick Johnston brought it up into the press box. And that's the first copy of the book that I've signed, which is
How did he get one before everybody else?
I think he got a promotional copy from like my publisher, actually. But a bunch of people who pre-ordered through different like independent bookstores have gotten theirs early too. So I don't know. I'm sorry, it's not my fault. But like I said, I don't even have my copies of the book yet, so you know, it's still coming. But yeah, I'm super excited about this. It took quite a while to write, but I'm really excited for people to read it. There is a book launch, book signing event on March 30th at the People's Co-op Bookstore at 7 p.m. So if anybody wants to come out to that, you can get your book signed, Quads.
I'm coming.
So it basically goes right from, you know, the spin of the wheel in 1970 that lost them Gilbert Perreault. It goes right from there, right up until, you know, Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes. Doesn't cover like the most recent drafts because, you know, there hasn't really been enough space to kind of see what's coming out of those drafts to really talk about them. But yeah, it covers decades of Canucks draft history. Mostly the highs. There are lots of lows in Canucks draft history, and I think we're all well aware of those. A lot of the stories I found out from some of the drafts that didn't go well for the Canucks, it usually was a case of, oh, this guy was good, then he blew out his knee and couldn't play hockey anymore. And it's like, well, that's not really a fun story.
Yeah.
You know, that's not, you know, it's not really an interesting story to go, hey, they found this guy and they were really excited about him, and then this horrible thing happened to him.
It's okay, like, oh, two-part.
That's lousy.
Two-part question then, Daniel. Sure. You don't have to tell me the most interesting story from the book, because I'm sure you want to leave something for readers and for people to go buy the book and read it. Most interesting person you talked to for the book, that's the first part. And second, just an interesting story from the book that you would like to share.
Sure. I really enjoyed talking to Mike Penny, who is a longtime scout and eventually assistant general manager for the Canucks. He was with the Canucks for decades, so I was able to talk to him about draft picks dating way back into their history, all the way up until more recent times. He gave me all sorts of insight about the Naslund trade and the things like that. So he was really interesting to talk to and just a wonderful, wonderful person, which makes me feel a little bit bad because I had to poke holes in his story about how the Canucks drafted Pavel Bure. But that's a whole thing. That to me is the Pavel Bure chapter is one of my favorites in the book because I uncovered some things that I don't think anyone has written about before. Some things that might be a little controversial, might make Brian Burke want to punch me. I don't know. We'll see. But Mike Penny was one of the guys who was instrumental in the Canucks drafting Pavel Bure. So he was just fascinating to talk to. Really enjoyed that conversation. As for stories, there's lots of really interesting stories in the book. I really enjoyed writing about the Sedin chapter. I think a lot of people are aware of most aspects of how the Sedins were drafted. But to me, one of the more interesting things was that there was this whole thing with the Tampa Bay Lightning and their ownership that nearly scuttled the entire thing. That there was this last minute, literally on the eve of the draft, the Lightning finalized a sale and transferred ownership to this new ownership. And I talked to people and I found these old quotes that basically said, if that didn't happen, the trade that gets the Canucks both Sedins probably doesn't happen. And so it was this literally like at midnight, the night before the draft, there's this thing that happened that had nothing to do with the Canucks. But if that doesn't happen, the Canucks probably don't get both Sedins. And that to me was fascinating that there was all these other things happening behind the scenes that we didn't really know about that kind of shaped the history of the Canucks in really profound ways. Yeah, there's lots of crazy stories in the book that I'm excited for people to read. One of my favorite things that I found is that, you know, everyone has this idea of the wheel that was spun that lost the Canucks Gilbert Perreault. And the way that story is told is just 100% wrong. And just in small ways, just silly things like, they thought the number was one and it was actually 11. Well, there was no ones on the wheel at all. Was one of my one of the things everyone thought was like, oh, they spun the wheel and it landed on a one. Literally impossible. There were no ones on the wheel. So I don't know. There's just all sorts of random things that I found that I just don't think are out there. And I tried to tell kind of the definitive story of each of these draft stories, whether it's Dale Tallon, Stan Smeal, Trevor Linden, all of those players. Like, I tried to tell the definitive story of how those drafts happened, kind of cut through some of the legends and myths that surround a lot of these players. And what I found is that a lot of those legends and myths, well, yeah, they're actually true. You know, Trevor Linden did skip a testing, a medical testing thing with the Canucks because he was helping his family brand Spears. That is a true story that happened. You know, so some of those legends and myths that we hear about were 100% true, and those were kind of fun to find out about and get the whole story behind them. And some of them, like how Pavel Bure was drafted, the story that we have out there isn't really true at all. And so people will have to read the book to find out why that is the case.
Leaving it on a cliffhanger, and I absolutely love it. Daniel, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time. And yeah, the book is On the Clock, the Vancouver Canucks, and it's by Daniel Wagner. And you can go buy it next week in all those bookstores. And I'm going to Daniel Wagner's house to pick up mine. But Dan, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
There he is, Daniel Wagner, who I didn't even mention once. You can find his work every day at passitdeboulis.com or vancouverisawesome.com. The .ca? One of the two. Passitdeboulis. If you just search Passitdeboulis, you will find it. Longtime blogger. We had someone asking, who is this guy? Longtime blogger. He shaped the blogosphere early on. Harmon and I don't exist without Daniel Wagner.
It's passitdeboulis.com.
Oh, yeah. He gave us the note. Yep. Beautiful. Beautiful. All right. Yeah. That was a great chat.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I forgot to do this. I was supposed to talk about this in the first segment. Well, let's continue. I still kind of want to talk about the Canucks and Sabres game.
Like, sure.
I think an underrated part of the game was like Elias Lindholm creating chances. You know what I mean? Like, I think if Elias Lindholm was playing with better wingers, there would have been a goal set up by Elias Lindholm at some point.
Probably.
Just want to throw that out there. Yeah. Thought he had a good game.
Ilya Mikheyev, too, by the way.
Ilya Mikheyev, hard on the forecheck. Really like, noticeable. A couple instances where it was like, whoa, this guy is moving his feet. He's, like, in on the forecheck, getting ahead of guys, and I think catching some Sabres players off guard a couple times.
There was one shift in the second period where he first... Like Rasmus Dahlin got the puck on the defensive half wall. He was trying to break it out. Mikheyev immediately smothers him, prevents him from being able to break it out. Now the Canucks are able to extend their offensive zone possession. Quinn Hughes has the puck. He's walking across the blue line. So first of all, he keeps a play alive there. Then as the play continues, the Sabres actually do find a way to clear it into the neutral zone. Hronek, I think it is, rims it back into the offensive zone. The Sabres are trying to break out. Paterka gets the puck. And Ilya Mikheyev on his horse, on the back check, just bodies JJ Paterka, passes it off to Elias Pettersson, protecting the puck to make sure that he could get it to Pettersson, immediately goes off for a change. And you're like, those are a couple of subtle plays that are driving possession and giving, like, look at the two players that got the puck because of Ilya Mikheyev.
Yes.
Quinn Hughes in the beginning and then Elias Pettersson at the end of Mikheyev's shift. So, just sequences like that, and at the end of the second when he forced another turnover on the forecheck and set up Sam Lafferty, if it was somebody other than Sam Lafferty, there's a decent chance that might have been a goal. So it's been nice to see him actually noticeable and impactful again.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's so important for this team, right? Like, not only Mikheyev, but, like, Lindholm as well, who we're talking about. So important for this team that those two guys, just one of those guys, turns into somebody that you can really trust, especially in the playoffs, right? Like somebody that is going to provide you offense and give you that three lines of scoring, right? And look, I'm not trying to toot my own horn too much, but my lineup worked. Remember yesterday?
Yeah, okay.
Boom!
You can't...
Life hack, kids. Life hack. If you're ever in my position and you're going to come up with something that's going to happen... Just go with what you think is going to actually happen and make sure it's against the Buffalo Sabres.
On the second leg of a back-to-back.
On the second leg of a back-to-back. Carmen, I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm going to say they stick with my lineup. My lineup. Not Rick Tucker. My lineup. And they beat the Montreal Canadiens.
Wow, real hot take.
Yeah, I'm going to say
Quads,
it.
The Canucks would be 82-0.
If they listen to me every day.
No. If your predictions actually came through on each game.
That's true.
Have you ever predicted them to lose a game?
I... picked the Leafs to win, but not against the Canucks.
Well, yeah, that doesn't count. What do you mean?
Have I ever picked a loss?
Not since I've been co-hosting.
I think on games I think they're going to lose, I just pick another team as my, when we used to do the bet way better the day.
You never vocalize it, that's for sure.
Yeah, I don't think this team's ever losing again, just like I said at the start of the year. When's their next
loss? I can't
loss?
Wait for the playoffs. You're going to predict like 4-game sweep of the Vegas Golden Knights in round one.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm looking at their schedule. I don't see a loss. Yeah, I don't know. I don't see a loss. Maybe April 3rd will be their next loss. Back to back.
Yeah, okay.
Arizona Coyotes. At the Arizona Coyotes. Vegas on the 2nd of April. Anyways, let's talk about Four Winds Brewing. More specifically, let's talk about one of their special beers that I'd like to talk about. If you've listened to the show for a while, you know about the Four Winds Light Lager. And by now, you should have had some. Okay, if you like it, but you're looking for something with a bit more weight behind it, you should check out the Four Winds Huff Gold Pilsner. Brewed as an homage to great German pils that came before it, Huff Gold is crisp and clean with a nice little European hop zip to round it all out. I love that hop zip. And you can ask for Huff Gold anywhere you find Four Winds products. It's also available online at fourwindsbrewing.ca for delivery anywhere in BC. Look at that beautiful can. From Four Winds Brewing, locally owned and operated in Delta, BC. All right, time for anyone else, presented by DoorDash. It's our listener's chance to get involved in his up in the YouTube live chat. And it's also our listener's chance to get 25% off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when they download the DoorDash app and enter the code NATION25. That's all capital letters, NATION, and the numbers 25. Offer valid in Canada, subject to change. Terms do apply. Folks, go check out Double Dash. No additional delivery fees for multiple restaurants or stores on the same delivery. Everyone can get what they want. And need. Beautiful. I could go for some Wendy's right now. Anyways, let's get to it. Anyone else? Did we get anyone? Anyone else's in the chat here?
Yeah, there's some in there, but I'll place some in here.
Okay, fantastic. We didn't even talk about Quinn Hughes' hit.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't even play the audio. Yeah, Grady, we have the Rick Tocchet talking about the Quinn Hughes hit, right? Like, Quinn Hughes...
Yeah.
And I wrote about it for Canucks Army. The thing I noticed in Quinn Hughes' answers there was at the end, he just said, I didn't even mean to hit him. Like, Quinn Hughes said he didn't even intentionally hit Victor Olofsson. He was just trying to step into him and, like, get the puck. And then Olofsson moved into him, and he was like, well, I'm not going to fall over. So he just braced himself, it seemed, and huge open ice hit for Quinn Hughes. And this is what I love. Like, when Rogers Arena is packed and when this team is humming, Canucks fans are some of the best in the league. And Rogers Arena was so loud. Rogers Arena was just absolutely buzzing after a hit like that. And that's what you get. Like, that's what you get in these hockey markets like Vancouver. And Quinn Hughes talked about that post-game. And Rick Tocchet talked about how that's a warning for the rest of the league.
What's the message around the league? Don't go up the middle with Quinn Hughes. He's human. But it's true. You never know. You know, you never know who might hit. Yeah, it was a hell of a hit. That was I think he on the bench. He was actually smiling that he liked it that much.
Yeah, he was smiling. And Quinn Hughes said after the game that he loved seeing that.
I like that as the play resumed, there was a brief scattered "Who's your daddy?" chant.
No,
there was.
Oh, that's
100%.
That's amazing.
And it was I can amazing. Confirm as a spectator last night watching the game, I was fanboying from that hit because people were fired up.
Oh, how can
and
you
they showed that replay and just his smirk. That was perfect.
By the way, one thing I will say is, and I don't mean to be the person looking down at like newer fans is like, oh, how do you not remember that? But somebody, I think it was on Reddit, was seriously comparing that to like a Scott Stevens open ice hit.
Yeah,
like, okay, look, that was a great hit by Quinn Hughes. I don't know if that was Scott Stevens
because... not quite.
Scott Stevens would murder people.
Well, I tweeted it out and I used Quinn Hughes just deleted Victor Olofsson, and I was like, afterwards I'm like, I sensationalized that. Like, it was a great hit. It was nowhere near Scott Stevens level hit. But I think it's because we just don't really expect that from Quinn Hughes, right?
Yeah, so that's why Scott Stevens move the puck like Quinn Hughes? No.
Yeah. Well, I just thought it was hilarious that someone's like, yeah, that's Scott Stevens.
I don't think Olofsson would have got up after if that was a Scott Stevens.
Yeah, that's a good point. RP88, do you think Quinn is leaving the NHL for the WWE now that he's unleashed his inner beast? Now that he's unleashed his inner beast.
I know nothing about the WWE, so.
Tell you what, you might get an invite. People are always asking about Nonno. Nonno called me, told me he's calling Rogers. He's with Shaw.
Yeah.
And said, I'm going to call them and tell them I want WrestleMania. And my nono's having a WrestleMania party.
Oh, let's go.
And he's like, you want to come? I was like, I'm there. You order WrestleMania? I'm there. And I go see him other times too. But WrestleMania party? I'm there.
Bring the stanchion too.
That's right. We're gonna bring a few people, I think. Yeah. WrestleMania party at Nono's. It's going to be a good time. Okay. Yeah, okay. This one from Karin. Does Quinn 100% go before Dolan in a redraft? Absolutely. Yes. And I think I would have said that 2 years ago, not just because I'm a giant homer, but because I've thought that highly of Quinn Hughes for a while.
In his rookie season, at the midway point, I wrote an article that was titled So Far, something along the lines, So Far, Quinn Hughes has been the best player of the 2018 NHL draft. Here's why. And I got so many Sabres fans.
Oh, yeah.
In my mentions, a lot of Carolina fans too, saying, oh, Svechnikov's better. And I was like, first of all, I'm only saying so far. There's room for error, but also Quinn Hughes is the best player in this draft.
Yeah,
you can just tell right away.
Yeah.
Even though Dahlin was hyped up as a borderline generational prospect, there's just something about Quinn. And to be honest, I thought they'd be very close during, you know, the primes of their career. And maybe it was closer last year where Dahlin was having a season where he
really
was
good start too.
Around, you could say, a top 10 defenseman in the NHL. But for my money, especially Dahlin's struggles under Ralph Kruger, even earlier in his career, like since they've entered the league, it's been Quinn and it's not really that close.
No, it's not close. He goes first overall in that draft, unequivocally. Okay. Okay, this one also. Oh no, this is you guys gotta change your names. The names are way too close. This is from Karin Versation.
If McKinnon Karin?
No, that's it's Karin. Don't say Karin. It's messing me up. It's Karin.
I'm so confused now.
Anyways, the chat is like trying to mess with us here. But this is from, okay, this is from Karin Versation, who used to be PHS. And I told him that I couldn't say his actual name that was spelled out. I didn't want to say it on the show anymore. So he changed it to Karin Versation. Anyways, get to the question. If Mikheyev keeps his pace up, pace meaning skating, not point pace, the Canucks should give a line of Joshua Lindholm, Mikheyev a shot when Dak is healthy. Could be a solid shutdown line, a real pain in the rear. I actually agree with that. I was thinking about that a little bit of, okay, if Mikheyev can be kind of that fast guy, I wonder if that line would work. The thing that I struggle with, Harm, is that Connor Garland was clearly the engine driving the third line, right? And Dakota Joshua played a massive part on that line, but Dakota Joshua wasn't the puck carrier on that line. So who's the puck carrier on this line? That's the question I have.
Also, who's going to score? Like, I know Joshua can't score, but a lot of it is set up by Garland.
I guess Lindholm hasn't scored much, but what I'm trying to say is historically, Lindholm needs someone to get him the puck.
Yeah.
Ilya Mikheyev isn't this excellent puck distributor or play driver, so there's nobody on that line to do it. I like the idea in theory because Mikheyev, if he keeps up his foot speed that we've seen in recent games, it might work stylistically. But then I just wonder about, okay, who's going to get him the puck? Like, who's going to get these guys the puck?
On paper, it's actually not a bad checking line. But yeah, offensively, I don't know if they're going to have the right playmaking combination. Somebody who can set up chances to have a high enough offensive ceiling.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, this is so good. Our chat, I gotta say, just a special shout out, and I know that we had a lot of people on podcast and we appreciate you too, but the people in the YouTube live chat, just every day, like, you've got Gnar every single day talking about squirrels for the past week. You've got Logan Van Dyke, who's the only person getting ads.
Yeah,
I don't know why. Like, he's the only person getting ads at this point, and he's always complaining about the ads. He's the only person getting them, as far as I can tell. He's the only person getting ads on YouTube. So it's great seeing the same names in the chat every day and new names as well. I don't know about that, though. Like, being a new name, like, you enter the chat for the first time and you're like, who are these people all having these inside jokes and all these conversations that are going on? And anyways, I just wanted to say, if you're on the podcast and you have the chance to listen or view on the YouTube live show and come interact with us, please do. It's a lot of fun. We have a lot of fun.
Confuse us even more.
Confuse us even more. Change your name to,
hey,
to Karin.
How about this one from RP88? Would you consider Petey and Hogs as a reliable pairing now?
Yes. If not, who else?
I mean, you don't have any better options.
It's like a default option.
Yeah, you paused a little too long there.
Well, The only thing I was going to say was Hoglander has been a bit quiet lately, but you don't have any other options.
I thought he was great last night.
Yeah, fair. I mean, I guess the couple of games before that.
Sure.
Then.
Yep. I think you'd hope Elias Lindholm could fit as the pairing, but who else is it? If it's not Nils Hoglander,
Hoglander has to be in your top six in some capacity.
Absolutely. Yeah. Simple answer there. Okay. Okay. Revenge of the Sixth. I've seen that name before. With Vegas's upcoming schedule, they might miss. Who would they play if they do, and is it better that they play them? And when he says they, he's not talking about Vegas. He's talking about the Canucks. Who would the Canucks play if Vegas misses? Harm, Vegas lost last night to the Tampa Bay Lightning, so you know I was looking at the NHL standings and trying to figure out, all right, how far away is Vegas from actually missing the playoffs? And like this commenter is asking, who would the Canucks face in the first round? Are you in agreement with me that Calgary is out of the playoff race? So St. Louis and Minnesota both have 69 games played. Nice. Minnesota is at 76. St. Louis is at 75. And Vegas is at 68 games, 79 points. I know I broke that down in a weird way for those on the podcast, so I apologize. But the point is that Minnesota is 3 points out. They do have a game in hand on Vegas. St. Louis is 4 points out of a playoff spot, and they also have a game in hand on Vegas. Or they have a game, they've played one more game than Vegas. So Vegas still has that spot, but with Nashville surging the way that they have, they've won three straight. They're 8-0-2 in their last 10 games. There's a chance that Vegas misses. If Vegas misses, it's going to be one of Minnesota or St. Louis that the Canucks would face if the Canucks still win the West. If we're assuming they're going to win the West, which is not a foregone conclusion. By any means.
Yeah, and the key for Minnesota is they have two head-to-head games against Vegas.
Yeah.
So those are going to be four-point games. I'm looking through their schedule. It's not easy. Like, they're playing tonight on the second leg of a back-to-back against LA. Then they've got St. Louis on the weekend. They do have a freebie against the Sharks, but then it's Vegas to close out the month. And then, like, they play Colorado twice. They play Winnipeg. They've got LA. You know, they've got the occasional game against, like, Chicago sprinkled in as well. But they've got some tough opponents coming up.
Yeah.
It's not going to be easy. And just for context, Dom Lucian's model has Vegas at 86% odds of still getting in. So, and there's a huge drop-off between Minnesota and St. Louis in Dom's probability. He's got Minnesota at 16%, St. Louis is just 3%.
3%, wow.
So I think St. Louis is done.
I can't wait if St. Louis makes it. Oh, Dom! Dom's wrong again. People that don't understand how probabilities work. Anyways, okay, this was from Jeff Batterson, this tweet, and I wanted to bring it up. This is from Jeff. He said, if the Canucks simply manage to play 500 over their final 13 games, they will finish the season with 107 points. The Oilers would need to go 10-5-1 to get to 107. This means that the Canucks have a sizable edge in regulation, overtime wins, and they won the season series. They have a much better chance at winning the Pacific than the Oilers. They basically control their own fate. And these two teams are going to play toward the end of April.
Yeah, and it's a good point that, like, initially I know we've been, or at least I've been bringing up the point that finishing first in the West doesn't really matter, but J-Pat brought up a good point yesterday that psychologically you don't want the Oilers to pass you. That would be a bit of a gut punch. You want to make sure that you stay on top there and don't have a little bit of a letdown going into the postseason, especially because the Oilers are probably salty from getting their teeth kicked in by the Canucks three times at the start of the season. Yep. So, yeah, I mean, the Canucks control their fate here, and they don't, like, the Oilers have a tough schedule coming up.
They do.
So,
they
played Colorado twice still. So, Canucks should be able to seize control and hang on here.
In instant reaction last night, I wrote that the Oilers have a tougher schedule down the stretch than the Canucks do. And, like, there was someone in the comment section being like, Quads is wrong. They don't have a tougher schedule. And, like, didn't show any of his work. He's like, oh, he's wrong. He's mistaken. He's thinking of another team. I'm like, what are you talking about? Of course they have a tougher schedule. Anyways.
They have a bunch of back-to-backs,
they
too.
They do. It's not easy. I may have specified that in terms of opponents, which maybe there's an argument there. But for the Western Conference playoff picture, just to kind of further this conversation a little bit, technically by points percentage, the Canucks are second in the Western Conference because the Winnipeg Jets have played one fewer game and have just one less point than the Canucks. So technically, the Winnipeg Jets are in first. In, well, not technically. Technically, the Canucks are, but by points percentage, the Jets are. So
Trance is proud.
The idea is that it's not a foregone conclusion that they are going to win the West. So in that case, they would face the Nashville Predators. Harmon.
Well, actually, if you go by points percentage, you've got... I was looking at the whoops.
You confused me there.
See, it should have been 1-8. It should be 1-8.
It should be 1-8. But back to the point, Harmon, my question to you, should the Canucks be trying to lose the Western Conference title?
I mean,
no, you definitely want to face Nashville instead of Vegas, but you're not going to intentionally lose. You're not going to intentionally lose at this time of year. They shouldn't.
Nashville just keeps winning.
Nashville does.
They're not stopping.
That's the thing. We throw out, okay, you don't want to face Vegas round one. You'd much rather face Nashville. That was the conversation you and I were having last week. Do you want to face the hottest team in the NHL in the first round of the playoffs? No, you don't.
Especially because we've seen Vegas, again, 2 years ago when they missed the playoffs. They were hammered by injuries the entire time. And even as they started to get guys back, like Eichel, they couldn't gel right away.
Yeah.
They couldn't just like flip a switch. So that's always a possibility that even as Vegas, let's say they get Mark Stone back game one of the playoffs. It's not even a hypothetical. They're going to get him back game one of the playoffs. They may not click right away. Mark Stone, if he doesn't look like himself right away, if that lacerated spleen is still hampering him or bothering him a little bit, or if Jack Eichel isn't still at his best, they may struggle like they did 2 years ago to be on top of their game. And again, like, they haven't been playing good hockey lately. They don't look like the same team that won the cup last year. And of course, you win a Stanley Cup, you earn the benefit of the doubt, but it's not a foregone conclusion that you're going to get the juggernaut version of Vegas if you do end up playing them round one.
Two really good comments here, back to back. So RE45 said, we don't need a we want Florida scenario. Of course, when Leafs fans chanted, we want Florida, and then got bounced in the first round.
Second round, excuse me.
Right below it, Revenge of the Sixth said, we want Florida. But they sent the comments at the exact same time. Like, he didn't have time to read Ari's comment and then reply. He just said it at the same time. He said, we want Florida. Like, that cracked me up. That was good.
I mean, legitimately, though, you would want Florida, your cup final.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. Of course you want Florida. We do want Florida on this show. Okay. We're going to close out anyone else there, and we'll be back tomorrow to preview tomorrow's game and chat about a few other Canucks topics. And Frank Cervalli will join us tomorrow as well. So it'll be a good show tomorrow, folks, and make sure you want to tune in for that one. 2 p.m. We are live on the Canucks Army YouTube channel. If you're joining us for the first time, make sure you hit that subscribe button and that notification bell. And make sure you check us out. 2 p.m. Monday through Friday. For my co-host Harmon Dial and our technical producer Grady Sassar, thanks again to Daniel Wagner for joining us on this episode. My name is Duke Woodrelly. Thank you so much for this episode of the Canucks Conversation. Canucks Conversation with Harmon and Quads, brought to you by the Toyota BZ4X. The BZ4X's fresh look is just an added bonus to its range, since you can drive up to 406 kilometers on a single charge. That's enough to get you from Kitsilano to Whistler or Kamloops to Kelowna and back, and still be home in time for the game. Now that's what we'd call electric. The best part, by choosing electric, you can get up to $11,000 in rebates and incentives. The BZ4X are in stock and selling quickly, so make sure to visit shoptoyota.ca or your local Pacific Toyota dealer to get your hands on one. Canucks Conversation is live Monday through Friday, every weekday at 2 p.m. over on the Canucks Army YouTube channel. Make sure you like, subscribe, and interact in the YouTube live chat every day with us, folks.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.